This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. It's the 31st of March 2010, and today I'm joined on the line by Dr. Deborah Peel, founder of the Patient Privacy Rights Foundation at patientprivacyrights.org. Dr. Peel, thank you very much for joining me today on the Corbett Report.
Oh, you're welcome, James.
Well, Dr. Peel, this is your first time on the program, so why don't you introduce yourself and your organization to the listeners?
Sure. Let me see where to start. Okay. Patient Privacy Rights is the voice for Americans who care about restoring their right to control sensitive personal health information in electronic systems. And we represent, really, most Americans, because every poll and survey has shown that Americans really believe and expect to control who can see and use their sensitive records. And we're talking here about everything from prescription records to DNA. Just a few words about how I came to start this organization. I'm a practicing physician. I'm a psychiatrist, an MD, and a Freudian analyst. And so, as you can imagine, I'm in the most privacy-sensitive specialty in medicine, and no one would talk to me if they thought their records were going to be up on the Internet. So, I first learned about the need for privacy from my patients. When I went into practice in the late 70s, people came and they said, if I pay you cash, would you keep my records private? That was such a shocker to me. It's still really shocking. And what had happened was people had found out, people that shouldn't know, what they were doing, what kind of doctor they were seeing, found out, typically bosses. This is really a matter of job security, lack of discrimination in jobs, or in what I was hearing about actually was discrimination in jobs. And so I became sensitized to the problem of privacy very early in my career, and you can imagine how different things are now when we've moved to electronic records and the ability for people to see and use your sensitive information has gone through the roof, because the kinds of electronic health systems we have simply prevent us from having the control that we had in the past. And so this was a problem really before electronic records, the lack of privacy. But it is so much magnified now when thousands of employees of providers and hospitals, doctor's offices, labs, x-ray facilities, and so on, insurance companies, can all see and use our sensitive health information without our permission. So that's kind of a long story, but I'm trying to tell you that where I'm coming from is, as a physician, I believe we should have a health system where people aren't afraid to come and see doctors if they think it's going to mean their jobs or their credit or their life's opportunities. And so that's why I started Patient Privacy Rights. And I founded it in 2004, and we now also lead an organization called the Coalition for Patient Privacy. And it's bipartisan, and the organizations that have joined us stand for the same important privacy principles, that people should control health information in electronic systems. And so the coalition represents 10 million Americans. You know, we have the American Civil Liberties Union, and we have the American Conservative Union, for example. And then what really lent a lot of strength to our position inside the Beltway in Washington was when Microsoft Corporation joined the coalition to say, look, we think the same thing. We think that in a wired world, people should control their health information. So that's how we got started, and that's what we're about. We're about protecting your rights, because what you say in the doctor's office really ought to stay in the doctor's office.
Well, I think you're right to point out the discrepancy between what people believe is happening with their records and what is actually happening, because I think a lot of people are in that former mindset where there was a greater deal of control over patient records and the privacy that's afforded them. So a few decades ago, there could be a large scandal when the White House plumbers broke in to the Democratic National Convention and were rummaging through Daniel Ellsberg's psychiatrist's records looking for dirt on him. But in this day and age, these types of records are widely available through a number of different means. So what are some of the major issues that we're facing right now? And what are some of the ways that people that we might not expect actually do have access to our medical records?
Sure. Well, yeah, your point about Daniel Ellsberg and the White House plumbers that had to physically break into an office is a very important one. People don't have to physically break into anything to get your electronic health records anymore. They can be in China, and they can get access. I mean, you know, this is really, really such a tremendous difference to think about. I mean, it's astonishing, really. I think the other thing today that we need to think about is of course the security of this information, and because it can be so concentrated, like on a laptop. You probably remember the example of the VA laptop, Veterans Administration laptop, that was lost with the records of 24.5 million or 25.4 million? Okay, either way, records on it. It was lost, and you know it would be impossible. In a paper records world, for anyone to steal 24.5 million records. I mean, it would take armies of people and battalions of 18-wheelers. You couldn't. So we have a situation of much higher risk today and much greater value for the information. And so you're saying, well, who wants the information? And that's a great question. Let's start with the funny part, James. The people that really want this information, you and me, the patient and the doctor, to use it to improve your health, we're the ones who can't get these records for the most part. You know this because the systems don't interoperate, as they say. The information can't easily be sent from one place to the other because the records systems are all different and don't easily, let's say, meld. Okay, So we have that incredible irony that the patients and their own doctors have the hardest time getting the records of anyone. But meantime, who is getting the records? Well, I guess one of the most awful and disturbing examples are pharmacies. Every pharmacy in the nation, all 55,000 of them, are data mined and have been selling our prescription records daily for over a decade. So pharmacies have them, and they trade and sell, essentially, our prescription records as commodities. That's a very disturbing thing to most patients for a number of reasons. The first is, of course, you know, if someone has your list of medications and the doses, they pretty much have a fairly accurate record of your health status. So it's very revealing. The second thing is, you know, in this day and age, when medication is so expensive, the irony is the knowledge that we're on the medication is very, very valuable to drug companies, to employers, to insurers. And so this information is sold. And it's sold not just to your health insurance company, but to virtually any company that would want to buy it, including property and casualty insurers, you know, other kinds of insurance products. They want to know what medicine that you're on. Employers are interested in the medicines that you're on. Many employers are interested. They will buy the information. And, of course, the major drug companies. This is, you know, kind of a, I think it's a serious, a very serious problem that I'm sure many of your listeners know about, which is, you know, the marketing of medicines in this country is such such a distorting, profit-driven mess, you know, that the drug companies are, you know, are constantly using the information about which medicine you're on to try to pressure physicians and pharmacists to switch to different drugs, and even to pressure patients to switch drugs through direct advertising, through the mailbox, or, you know, indirect advertising on TV and in magazines. And so, so that's just one example of the incredible value of health information. And it's very, very disturbing that companies should be able to steal our prescription records and sell them for billions of dollars. I mean, the sale of prescription records worth billions of dollars. Meantime, grandma can't afford her medicine. Something is really, really wrong with that kind of equation. So there's a huge market. I guess it's easiest to understand and explain the huge market for prescription records. But the same holds for information that insurance companies have. The largest insurer in the nation in all 50 states aggregates and sells the claims and health data of, I think it's either 59 or 79 million Americans. Pick a figure. Let's just say it's 59, because I can't remember exactly. But they aggregate and sell this data to major employers, so they can understand what kinds of costs their own employees have and compare them to the figures that are supplied by this major insurer. Now, when data is aggregated and sold, it can be re-identified. That's another problem with electronic health records. You know, we're told that, hey, you know, this data can be anonymized or de-identified, but it's nearly impossible to do so. So if people sell aggregated data sets and they have things like your sex, something to do with, I don't know, part of your zip code, something to do with your age, maybe a year, this information is highly re-identifiable. So this data, again, is being sold, and it's all to help other people, other corporations, with maximizing profits in their business. And, you know, that wouldn't be so bad, but the whole purpose, and some of us wouldn't even object to that, but the whole purpose of medical records, let's just go back to the ground floor. The purpose of a medical record is to help your doctor take better care of you. It is not to create billion-dollar industries that have nothing to do with improving your health, and have everything to do with actually endangering your future and your children's futures.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, it's horrific. It shouldn't be surprising that this is going on, but it is horrific and really flabbergasting when it's all put together in perspective like that, because people really aren't keeping an eye on this, I think.
Well, we haven't been told, James, and you know, here's the thing. There is really almost no way to know what a nightmare this is unless you somehow work in healthcare. You know, and or in health technology, because again, the health technology companies are very deep into these systems. You know, and their employees can see and use the information too. But you know, getting back to what this is really about for me, I don't know, James. I'm a parent. I have children, and I have grandchildren, and I cannot see a world for us where all of our children and grandchildren's health information, from their genetic records to their medicines to whatever they have, you know, is known not just by government agencies, but by private corporations. They're not going to get jobs. I mean, that brings us full circle to what I learned starting when I began to practice in the 70s, is when this information leaks out, sensitive health information, someone is going to get scared about it. And if it's your boss or your banker, this is not a good thing. This is not a good thing. And the reason it's not is despite what people may fear, we are simply not exactly what our diagnoses or our genes say we are. And let me give you what I think is a pretty powerful couple of examples. Do you think that the nation would have elected Ronald Reagan president if they had understood his genetic risk of Alzheimer's disease? Do you think that? And he had, you know, a familial kind. I think the answer is no. And whatever your politics are about Reagan, you know, he was one of the most popular presidents that we've had in the last century. You know, or, and it's pretty well known now, another very popular president, JFK, had all kinds of actually pretty complex and awful diseases. None of that was known at the time of his presidency. You know, a third example is Lou Gehrig. He had a familial muscle-wasting disease called amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. Okay, great ball player. I ask you today, would a young, talented player who wanted to get in the major leagues be hired today if they ran a genetic test and found he had ALS? I don't think that a future Lou Gehrig would get that chance. And my point is, I think I'm making it pretty clearly, tell me if I'm not, is it's just not that simple who can do what. And we should not be judged based on fears of what might happen to us. We should not. I mean, people should be judged for what they can do and who they are and their skills, not what might be in their genes or what might be in their medical records. And that's it. Okay, there's tiny exceptions. You know, we don't want engineers on trains, let's say, or airline pilots to be doing drugs. Okay, there's a couple of occupationally related, occupations where there might be a very specific need to know a certain kind of information about you for safety, for the safety of others. But most jobs are not like that. You know, if you get sick and you can't work, you can't work, you know, and then you might have to quit or go on leave or whatever. But really, you know, most jobs, they don't need to know this information, and employees don't want employers to know all this stuff about them.
Well, absolutely, and I think you bring up a valuable distinction in the types of medical information that we're talking about, because I think there is a difference between the types of medical conditions that people have, or the types of medications that people might be on, or various substances that people might be taking, versus their genetic predisposition to certain illnesses that might develop in the future at some point. So there is a difference, and I think we're being hit by a double whammy, not only the increasing amount of the electronic nature of health records, which makes them more prone to being lost or being transferred or being tampered with or being exposed or being all sorts of different things, but also, also the increasing scrutiny of right down to our genome of our genetic predispositions, which is a new sort of medical record in itself. So we have all of this happening at the same time, and we have the ignorance of a vast majority of the people out there that these issues are developing. So I think that's why the work that you're doing is so important. But getting more specifically into the genetic privacy, and I think you've touched on just how central this issue is going to be in the future. But what can you tell us about where we're at right now in terms of DNA privacy and where you would like things to head towards in the future, thinking about future legislation on this topic?
Well, DNA privacy is absolutely critical for the future of research. Absolutely critical. Because I think, you know, we would all like to be able to have this information and understand, you know, what turns genes on and off, you know, how genes influence illness and so forth, but we are never going to get it. And Francis Collins said this when he was at the NIH, you know, that the future of using genetic information for research is dead on arrival if we don't make sure that the information remains private. And so we have massive problems in this area. one of which is that the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act, GINA, by the time Congress passed it, it was more of an illusion, more of a lovely idea than a reality, because here's what it allows. It prohibits employers and insurers from asking you to get a specific test prior to employment or, you know, getting a health insurance policy. Okay, that's nice. But if your doctor orders a genetic test, and who else would? If the doctor orders it at any other time, then that information is in your record and will be endlessly shared and used against you forever. So this is a serious problem, and I think probably your listeners know this from, you know, watching TV crime shows. Another problem we have is we literally shed DNA all the time. Hair falls out, you know, cut your toenails, saliva. You know, when you take a sip out of coffee, cup, you know, you leave evidence of your DNA on the coffee rim. So we shed sensitive information everywhere. So we've got a pretty disturbing situation here where the cost of being able to essentially do genetic tests, map your genome almost, figure out what's in your DNA, is the cost of doing these tests is dropping dramatically. You know, it's going to be very, very easy to get people's DNA, but DNA, my God, it's this particular kind of tissue, parts of us, you know, is uniquely not able to be de-identified. I mean, my God, it's the unique fingerprint of who we are. So this is tremendously, tremendously worrisome to people, and yet it holds the greatest promise for research that there is. And you know, you might be aware of, and some of your listeners might be aware of, some of the problems that are beginning to happen around the nation with the newborn blood spot programs. Maybe I should say just a little bit about that. And in all 50 states, when a baby is born, laws have been passed that require a little heel stick and a few drops of blood are taken, and the baby is tested for, it depends in different states, for various diseases. But it started out with testing babies for diseases that were silent, that would essentially kill them before they were even recognized. Phenylketonuria, you know, some really obscure things that most people would never hear of. But so all these states have these blood spots. And holding on to them now because of the future and the promise of genetic research is, you know, could be very important, but states are not going to be able to do that unless the public trusts that the spots will only be used in ways that they would want them to. So, for example, in Texas, where I live, the state held on to about 5.4 million spots without clear authority, and some parents sued, saying they wanted them to be kept private and not used without their permission. They wanted a consent process. And the state refused, and so the only solution was to burn the spots, incinerate them. Now, Patient Privacy Rights and the Genetic Alliance tried to come in at the 11th hour and offer the state a way out, a technology solution with consent, you know, that would have allowed parents to go online and say, destroy my spot, store it for now and do nothing, store it and use it for research, store it and use it for research if you ask me which kind of research, and send me a copy for, you know, our own personal health use and to share with our doctor. But, you know, we were too late. But the fact of this information that's so sensitive out there and being held and being used without permission is very disturbing. And so newborn blood spot programs are getting hit around the country with complaints from concerned parents and even in some cases lawsuits about how these spots are being handled. And it turned out in Texas, some investigative reporters found that actually the state had sent several thousand spots to the Armed Forces Mitochondrial Identification Project. And, you know, this was very disturbing to people. And so again, what we're really, really interested in building a trusted system where patients are asked and parents are asked about the use of whatever blood spots or blood or their records are used for research. It's very, very important that we have a trusted system, and the only way that we can have one is if our control is restored over the uses of these information, this kind of information.
That's right. I mean, that's so right, especially in that example where the DNA mitochondrial research database was being formed by U.S. armed forces, and they're sending blood samples that are taken without knowledge or consent from babies at birth. It's almost Orwellian, The key issue here is that all people are really asking for is to be asked about the signing on to such a system, rather than simply having it done not only without their consent but without even their knowledge. It's really unthinkable.
Thank you so much. Oh yes. Yeah, you are so right, James. Most people don't really realize anything about the newborn blood spot programs because, you know, the laws were passed in states years ago. And years ago, you know, the spots were on these little, you know, they almost look like little cardboard cards. You know, nobody could do much with them. But now, think about the potential of the blood spot. Okay, and what was such a shame about the destruction of millions of them in Texas? Okay, when your baby's born, their DNA is, if you will, it's kind of pure. You know, it's fresh. It hasn't had any changes from environment or other factors. So, okay, it would be, for many parents, and this is how I would feel about it, would be wonderful to store that spot in case something happened to my child later on, in case they developed a major illness, bronchitis, depression, cancer. Because, in particular, for example, cancer, when you develop cancer, your DNA changes. It changes. So what if you had, you know, a sample of your DNA from before the cancer? You could compare, researchers could compare what changed in the DNA. That could lead to treatments specifically designed to what those changes were that might specifically work for you. I mean, that would be amazing. Amazing. That's truly what technology and what research could do. And the government is trying to support this. This is called, this whole field of using genetics along with health history and tests and knowledge about, you know, your health is called personalized medicine. They're spending millions to try to develop initiatives to tailor medicines and treatment just to us. But who is going to trust that? Who is going to trust that if their DNA and their, you know, whatever it might say, you know, is used to, like I was saying, to predict the future course of your life and diseases and prevent you from getting a job? You know, and I go back to my example about President Reagan. You know, he clearly had the signs of early Alzheimer's in office. Would he have been elected if the public knew that? And, we really, really have to do this the right way. And there's been research, you know, when specifically about the newborn blood spot program, if they found that if parents were asked if the spots could be used for research, just that, not even saying which research, 75% of them were okay with it. Whereas if they knew the spots were going to be used without their consent, fully 51% were opposed. No, more than 51%. Almost 70% were opposed, and less than 20% were okay with the use of the spots. And so, yes, your point is the American people really do want the benefits of research, but they hate having someone make these decisions for them. And we believe ethically, according to research ethics, the rights and the autonomy of the individual, you know, should always come first. Should always come first. But what we're dealing with in defending your rights to privacy, to health privacy in Washington, is that this information about us, whether it's genetic or prescription records or claims records or health information is so unbelievably valuable. You cannot imagine the numbers of lobbyists opposing our rights to privacy, which have been the foundation of the doctor-patient relationship from, well, from the time of Hippocrates, frankly. I mean, if you think about it, he was a genius. You know, 2,400 years ago, you know, he realized that people were scared and frightened and embarrassed and, you know, and it was very difficult for them to talk to doctors unless they knew that the doctors kept their secrets. So that, you know, that becomes the basis of the Hippocratic Oath, you know, that doctors still take today. But today we have really kind of, the perfect storm for really the destruction of our privacy forever, because the stimulus bill has $38 billion in it to buy electronic record systems, and these industry lobbyists that are affecting how the rules are written in D.C., in Washington, you know, have put off, have delayed or weakened the new privacy protections our coalition got into the stimulus bill, so that the electronic record systems that are going to be purchased do not have our rights to control our sensitive information in them. That is the one thing that it will take to build a trusted system. It is the one thing that they have left out. So all of these doctors and all of these hospitals are going to be compelled, by the way, by law, to put these little electronic record systems in. It was President Bush's and President Obama's aim that every American will have an electronic health record by 2014. So they're going to build this system the wrong way. And even if you're not a technologist, you know that these electronic systems are quite complicated, and you need to build critical elements in up front. Trying to add them later is often much more difficult and much more expensive. So the government is going to buy the equivalent of clunkers, you know, not modern, innovative products that do the right thing for the public, that actually meet existing laws. They're going to sell products that violate the laws. It's stunning to me, because this is the influence of the insurance lobby, the health data mining lobby, the drug companies, and so on, and the voice of regular people is not easily heard there. I mean, and again, that goes back to why we exist, and it also goes back to why, you know, patient privacy rights and our coalition, you know, has essentially become the national leader, because we have the goods on what's going on, and we can explain it to Congress people. But here's the thing, James. We need the help of everyone, all of your listeners, to help us turn this around. And we've started something, a petition on our website called the Do Not Disclose List. It's going to work like the Do Not Call List if Congress passes a law, makes it a reality. But right now it's a petition. The idea is if your name is on Do Not Disclose, no one that holds your health information in digital form, no one that holds it, can do anything with it without your permission. Very simple. And James, if we get 500,000 or 1,000,000 people to sign this petition, we can fix this mess. It doesn't take that many people, that many voters, to convince Congress that they've got a mess on their hands. And the only way we can win against these multi-million dollar lobbyists is with voters. So that's what we're trying to do, and I, you know, I hope your listeners will go look at www.patientprivacyrights.org. It's right there on the front page. Do not disclose. You know, just needs your email address, and if you'll share it with us, your zip code, and we're not going to do anything with your information except use this petition to drive Congress to do the right thing.
Absolutely, an incredibly laudable idea, because if we can create a list of do not disturb for telemarketers, I'm sure there is a way to create a do not disclose list for medical information. And it's how much more important is this than a do not disturb list? So, absolutely, the fact that this hasn't happened already or wasn't actually engineered into the system in the first place only shows the extent to which the almighty dollar rules all aspects of this system. So absolutely, people need to go and take a look at privacy, patientprivacyrights.org to find out more about your group and the things that you're working on. But Dr. Peel, of absolutely fascinating subject, and I'm sure we could talk many more hours about these types of issues. But I think that's probably good for this conversation. But just tell people one more time a little bit about the website and if there's anything else that people can do to help support what you're doing.
Sure. On our website, it's designed for everyone. I hope you think that it's clear and simple, because that's the idea. But we tell you, okay, what happened to health privacy? On it, we post all the stories of what's going on with health privacy, all of the issues. Who's selling your data, issues about whether de-identification works or not, the security of systems. There's a whole list of news stories where you can learn about this. If you sign up, we'll send you alerts. We'll keep you posted. We'll tell you when you can act. When is a very timely time for you to call your congressman or write Washington or sign a petition. We'll tell you things you can actually do. And on our website, we have a consumer toolkit, so you can fight back against the misuse of your information. You can print out consent forms that you can take. Take them to your pharmacy, take them to your lab, take them to your doctor's office, get them to sign that they will not disclose your information without your permission, which is still the law in all 50 states. That's another irony. This federal law, the privacy law that really was gutted and turned inside out and never reported on, is now a disclosure law. HIPAA doesn't protect your privacy. HIPAA was always intended to be a floor for your rights, and stronger state laws and medical ethics were supposed to apply. So if you download consent forms, you can take them to everybody and tell them, according to my rights, you don't get to do this. Sign here. So you can fight back, at hospitals, at doctor's offices, at labs. Now, the truth is many of them will say, we appreciate what you want, but we're not going to do it. But that's a very important thing, to register your protest by taking these forms with you. And you will find, too, though, that many doctor's offices, small practices, will say, I'm going to protect your information. And that's another awful thing about HIPAA. If you can ask, what they did to our right of consent is you can ask for them to respect your rights, but they do not have to agree, if you can imagine this, to respect your rights. They can say no. And so, that's what's wrong with HIPAA and this law, is how do you have a right to privacy, if you have to beg someone to exercise it and they're allowed to say no? You don't have it. And so there's lots of information on our website. We rate, for example, PHRs, personal health records. You can learn how bad some of these products are. We've given out our first grades, and they range from A to failing. So we have a lot of great information about what's going on and what you can do, and we really hope that your listeners will help us, because, James, here's the thing. If we don't do this right, it's going to waste billions of dollars. But more than that, it's going to create generations of discrimination. And, I don't know, James. I'm a physician. It's just so wrong to me. Health information should be used to help people, not to hurt them. And there's no reason that we can't build these systems the right way. Great technology exists to do this the right way. The problem is corporations, industry, and the government don't want to do this because they want to use our information without our permission.
Absolutely right. Well, a key issue that isn't getting enough attention, so I hope people will check out patientprivacyrights.org. Dr. Deborah Peel, thank you very much for joining me on the program today.
Oh, you're so welcome, James. Anytime. Thank you for this chance. Thank you.